remarkable mediocre poetry. So four chapters about mediocre poetry and how Dvani manifests in such poetry. Fifth chapter is a long chapter about rasa, bhavas and rasa. And the theory is given, presented somewhat differently than in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And Kavi Karna explains the difference between Bhakti Rasa, the original Bhakti Rasa, and Kavya Rasa. Bhakti Rasa is based on a person experiencing a relationship with Krishna on the foundation of his own sthayi bhava. It's an immediate experience. Immediate haribo. There's only three of us here. Actually, there's four of us here. I'm sorry. Okay. No, I just want to make sure we're all together here. Rasa, I was talking about what's in it. He's particularly making a presentation of Kavya Rasa. Original Bhakti Rasa, what a person is experiencing is all centered around his own sthayi bhava, his basic relationship with Krishna. Kavya Rasa is what we call in English vicarious. You get some experience by witnessing someone else's relationship with Krishna. It's not your sthayi bhava necessarily, but you taste, you relish it through the filter where it ends up being kavya rasa. And the rasas are analyzed somewhat differently. There's a different list of rasas. At least there's the traditional list given by Bharat Muni of 11 rasas or 10 rasas. Sakya and Vatsalya are not on the list. And what he calls Sringara is actually a combination of Sakya, Sringara, and Madhurya. They're all bundled together into one. And then he doesn't distinguish between the minor rasas and the major rasas, Bharat Muni. And he lists them in different order. And then there's debate among the earlier theoreticians on rasa whether there's a bhakti rasa, you know, to add to the list. But Kavi Karnapur reconciles. It's not necessarily an incompatible system. It's describing Kavya Rasa, the kind of vicarious experience you get from poetry and drama. And so he gives a detailed analysis, which is very similar to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Bhakti Sandarbha, of how the rasas manifest. Long chapter. Then the fifth chapter. Can you ask questions? Let me just tell you about the sixth chapter, and then we can take questions. The sixth chapter, guna, qualities, virtues of poetry. There are certain qualities like clarity and so on and sweetness that are virtues in a poem. And I think there are different virtues for different rasas, gunas. I don't remember much about this. This is the sixth chapter. The analysis of good qualities in poetry. And then the seventh chapter we're going to start now. The seventh and eighth chapter are about the figures of speech, or alankars, the ornaments of poetry, which are not of necessarily essential importance. Poetry can be devoid of ornaments and still be very beautiful and effective. If the language can be very simple, but very effective. And there can be adequate expression of dvani without any ornaments. But ornaments can be added, and they do add to the beauty if used properly. But they're like the external ornaments of poetry. They're not the soul and not the life air. But they're an elaborate topic, and Kavi Karnapur divides it up into two groups, two different chapters. There are alankars based on the sound, and alankars based on the meaning. The body of poetry is dual. The body of poetry is sound and meaning, the words and their meanings. So the ornaments that are based on the sound are discussed in the seventh chapter. And then the ornaments based on meaning will be discussed in the eighth chapter. Okay, Dharmada Prabhu.
It was according to the questions you're, the answers you were giving to Bhaktivikash Maharaj in one tree of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a list of the rasas, and they seem unsystematic. He was mentioning this question, but that's the way they list. Because they don't list, usually we list like the five principles.
You'll see, if you look at chapter 5 of this book,
yeah,
you'll see a similar list, not exactly the same.
Similar, but it's not. But it's all bundled up. It's not like, because usually you have the systematic way of dasya.
Right, well, Kaviyarasa doesn't understand, Kaviyarasa doesn't recognize the same hierarchy,
like
the supremacy of Madhurya Rasa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, first of all, most of the poets were mundane poets following this theory. And they were talking about the loving affairs of ordinary men and women. And it's hard to show that the sexual affairs of ordinary men and women is really the highest reality. You know, it isn't. It's the lowest thing in the material world. And the mundane poets, that's what they're describing. So how can you justify that Madhurya Rasa is supreme if you're talking about the Madhurya Rasa of ordinary men and women? So, for various reasons, they don't put the list in the same order among the poets. Thing is, you've got the mundane poets sort of dominating the game, and then you've got Vaishnava poets who are playing along with them, following the same theory. You know, they're using the same textbooks and writing textbooks based on the material textbooks. This book, Alankar Kaustava, is based on the Kavya Prakash, written by the material poet, Mamata. But it follows the same theory and the same terminology. So the Vaishnavas are using the theory of the materialists, adapting it for spiritual purposes. But it starts off as a material theory. Bharat Muni wasn't a Vaishnava. Was not. And what he was describing was material emotions.
There's aparavidya and there's paravidya. So kavya originally...
What?
Aparavidya and paravidya. Aparavidya.
Well, I don't know if you even call this vidya. Aparavidya is what's taught in the Rig Veda and the other Vedas.
But what
mundane poets say is just a pile of garbage. It's just, you know, worse words are used to describe it. You know, pig stool or whatever. I wouldn't call that any vidya. It's avidya. Yes? Vaisatirtha, yeah. The garbage heap inhabited by crows. But Kavi Karnapur is using the material textbook and adapting it, changing it around completely. Just like Jiva Goswami is taking the mundane grammars and using them.
Equate bhakti rasa with like dasya rasa, or do they equate bhakti rasa with dasya rasa, or do they have a different definition?
Kavi Karnapur doesn't do that. It seems that in the fifth chapter, Kavi Karnapur is merging the three rasas together under Sringara rasa. Not dasya, I mean sakya, vatsalya, and. Okay, so where does dasya come in? Well, dasya probably is bhakti rasa. Yeah. Yeah, there's that 11th rasa that not all poets accept. That would be dasya rasa.
So that means like Bharata Muni, he accepts Shanta rasa.
Bharata Muni doesn't mention bhakti rasa. That comes later.
Okay, but he accepts like Shanta rasa and Sringara rasa.
And Vira rasa. They're the primary ones.
Vira.
And then, you know, there are other secondaries.
Okay.
But in mundane poetry, it's love affairs and heroism. Those are the big topics.
Yeah.
Why?
Why want to do some kavya if it's originally avidya? Is it something, okay, that's one question.
No, Kavya is not originally avidya. It's just in the history that we can trace back.
Okay.
The oldest book we have is by by this Bharat Muni. But Kavya comes from the spiritual world.
Like Chitralekha or something.
Yeah, the gopis are practicing it, and it's practiced in Vaikuntha. It's a spiritual art. And there must have been a time on the earth when something closer to the original Kavya was known. Much before this Bharat Muni that we know about.
So when is Bharat Muni?
We don't know. No idea. Just like Panini, we don't know when.
Okay. But still like traditional concepts. And
yes?
Still traditional concepts.
Yeah, the concepts are there, just not understood.
Because
the terminology is there, but just like in the Nyaya Sutras, the oldest commentary we have on the Nyaya Sutras from the first century A.D. I think it's not Ujjotakara, somebody called Vatsyayana before that wrote the first commentary on the Nyaya Sutras. It's obvious from his commentary and the next one that they weren't exactly sure in all cases what Gautama Rishi was talking about when he was using certain terms. The tradition was lost. Gautama Rishi must have been thousands of years before this, and the Buddhists did such a good job of taking over the country that the original logic was lost. And when they tried to recover it, they had a hard time explaining everything. They couldn't remember exactly what Gautama meant by his everything in his sutras. Like that, this Bharat Muni, he's probably replacing someone who came before him. We don't even have anything older than him. So he's quoted as the first authority, but he isn't necessarily the first authority in the universe on poetry. There could have been a more purely spiritual version of poetics before him, but we don't have any trace of it.
So it seems that we see our acharyas, like, for example, sorry, I hope you don't mind we're taking this direction, that we see that our acharyas like Kavi Kanapur and Jiva Goswami, it seems that they're using what could be said mundane knowledge, like for example this poetry which was mundane, and then make it spiritual.
Well, there must be something authentic left in it.
Yeah.
For them to be able to adapt it and straighten it out, rectify the deviations.
Yeah.
There must be some, there must be some structural, sturdiness in it. Okay. It can't be completely corrupt and completely wrong. Otherwise, why would they try to adapt it?
Yeah.
You can see that Kavi Kanapur uses all the same definitions of all the Alankars, that almost exactly the same, with a few intentional differences, but very few. He writes different karakas. He writes his own karakas. Jiva Goswami doesn't in the Bhaktivedanta Shesha. He uses the same karakas as Vishwanath Kaviraj. Kavi Kanapur writes his own karakas, but the definitions are the same of what each alankara is, except for one or two he changes. So there must have been something sound in what Mamata presented, even though he was himself, not really a Vaishnava. He wrote some things that sounded a little bit Vaishnava, but not a real pure devotee. Still, somehow, the core of the tradition was preserved so that there was something left that could be rectified and still used. It's like, the Jagannath Temple for hundreds of years was run by the Buddhists. It was a Buddhist temple for hundreds of years. Somehow they didn't destroy it, and it remained intact, and it was retaken over by the Vaishnavas, and it goes on. So like that, the theory of poetic was taken over by materialists, but they didn't manage to destroy it completely. What are you going to do with the Jagannath Temple? It's a solid stone. So like that, this theory is so solid that even in the hands of materialists for thousands of years, it remains roughly intact.
Thank you. I have more questions regarding this, but I'll approach you personally. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah?
Sorry.
Very shortly. Okay. Is there any Vedic branch of literature of Kavya, original Vedic literature?
Well, it's not Vedic. Kavya is a different way. It's like the Tantras are a different way of worshipping the Lord. So Kavya is not really part of Vedic sacrifice. There's need for astronomy to figure out the right time. There's need for pronunciation and grammar in order to pronounce the mantras correctly and also understand what you're saying. There's need for all these different Vedangas, but poetry is not one of the Vedangas. I don't think the Soma sacrifices have any singing or dancing in them, you know, or any plays, skits. You know, it's not part. The drama is not directly used in the sacrifice. So therefore, it's not directly Vedic. The position of it is something like the tantras, which are meant as a way to worship the Supreme for people who can't chant the Vedic mantras. And poetry is another way to get spiritual knowledge for a different class of people. But it's not really Vedic directly. It's not part of the Vedic literature. It's a different category altogether. But the there are Vedantists and there are pure devotees of the Lord who are poets.
Does it mean that
there's something devotional about poetry, but there isn't something very Vedic about it necessarily. Yeah.
Does it mean that originally this poetry was used by Krishna himself and Vaishnavas in order to convey this?
Well, Katagana, Natyam Gamanam. In the spiritual world, in Goloka, all the talking is poetry.
Does it mean that
everything they say is poetry in Goloka?
Does it mean that when Krishna came into this world, he exhibited this kind of relationship based on this kavya and poetry,
yes,
and so on,
yes,
dances? So
yes.
And then people saw it and then somehow developed it, and then it became again mundane.
Well, okay, it's not only when Krishna appeared. There's other avatars also. And there are devotees of the Lord descending from the spiritual world. They bring it with them. Just like Prabhupada said that these great musicians like Mozart are coming from the heavenly planets. So there's a mundane example, but somebody coming from a higher realm in order to, you know, make the art progress in the material world. So devotees who come down from Vaikuntha, they also introduce the spiritual arts. You know, by their own practice. They write poetry. And also, there is poetry in the Vedas. The Vedas themselves are poetic. But there's no theory of poetry in the Vedas. Yes? There are a few statements. There are a few theoretical statements about the nature of speech in the Rig Veda and elsewhere. And that, you can consider that the seed of the poetics. The state, you know, the glorification of Vak in the Vedas.
Yeah, it's like some poems that I'm going to read in this one third chapter of the Ani Purana. It's
take the microphone. That's just a placebo.
Yeah, it's not Vedic, like you said. It's not a Vedanga or anything. But I seem to remember reading that there's one total chapter of Agni Purana dedicated to meters and one dedicated to kavya also.
Right, but that may not be an original chapter of the Agni Purana. In fact, a lot of the Agni Purana may not be original. Especially since it looks very close to kavya, what do you call the book? Vishwanath's book? Yeah, it looks very close to Satyadharpana. It looks like it was copied right out of it. Okay, any other further discussion? Okay, let's start chapter 7. Just started. Well, there was a statement back in the first Kirana, the first chapter of this book. I'm looking for my place. Yeah. In fact, the very first Karika, it said, they're talking about the Kavya Purusha. Upamati Muko Alankriti Gana. The ornaments on the body of the Kavya Purusha are the alankars headed by Upamiti. Now, Upamiti is the first on the list. It's the most basic and important ornament. But that suggests that the ornaments of meaning, artha alankars, are more important. They're mukhya. And the ornaments of sound, shabda alankars, are secondary. They're less important. Because Upamiti is a, if it's the first on the list, it's also one of the Artha Alankars. So in general, Artha Alankars must be more important. So what do? Deal with the less important topic first. It's also shorter, it's much simpler. So the seventh chapter, therefore, will deal with the secondary rasas in the category of Shabda Alankar. Secondary ornaments. And the first one to be defined is Shlesha. What is Shlesha? Yeah, double meaning, double entendre. He gives a karaka defining it. When something is expressed by the single meaning of a word, its literal meaning. Some words have more than one literal meaning, but we'll just talk about one meaning of a word, which is its original literal meaning. That expresses something. But when that can be turned around and turned into something else, into another meaning, when you can have another meaning imposed on it by and explained in the vritti and in the commentary, it's done by vyanjana, by suggestion. The word takes on a different meaning than its original single meaning. That is called shlesha or double entendre. Now, if I'm not wrong, shlesha is in both chapters. There are shabda shleshas and there are artha shleshas. Shleshas that depend on the particular word and other double entendres that don't depend on the particular word. So shlesha is discussed in both chapters, under both categories. Here it's being discussed under Shabda Alankar. And actually shlesha is only one kind. The more general term is vakrokti, crooked speech, twists of language. Well, there was an earlier theoretician who said that vakrokti is the soul of poetry, that the convoluted use of language is the real essence of poetry. That we don't agree with. But here is vakrokti appearing as the first of the Shabda Alankars. Crooked speech in two forms, in the form of double entendre, and the second one is kaku, or peculiar intonation. Especially kaku is a plaintive intonation. But it's more generally refers to any way of changing the meaning of what you're saying by your intonation. It doesn't have to be, it can be angry. You can say something angrily and that changes the meaning. So it's not just lamentation that kaku indicates. So two different kinds of vakrokti, shlesha and kaku. Or you can say the shlesha and kaku are the two means of creating vakrokti. So let's look first at shlesha, double entendre. There are two categories of that. Abhanga and sabhanga. Bhanga means that you have to split the words up differently to get the different meanings. Sabhanga. And where that's not necessary, where there's no re-splitting up of the words involved in getting a second meaning, that's abhanga. Abhanga shlesha. So abhanga shlesha is actually more intense, deeper, because sabhanga is sort of a trick, of splitting up the words differently. It's not really the same word meaning two different things. It's actually two different words. It also has its effect, but it's a different kind of effect. So here's an example of, are you ready for examples? Example of abhanga shlesha, where the double entendre is done without splitting the words up in different ways. Kastvam shyama harir babhuva taridam vindavanam nirmrigam kham ho nagari maravosmya asamaye vaishaka masakutaha mugde vidhi janardanosmi tadiyam yogya vane vastitihi vastitir bale ham madhusudanosmi viditam yogyo dvive pobavan. Well, this is an example of uttara, or an ornament where there's questions and answers being going back and forth. There are two people involved, one in asking the questions and the other in answering, back and forth. This is Krishna and Radha. Who are you? Answer, Shama. I'm Shama. Hari, you're a lion. So thus, this Vrindavan forest has become rid of all the mrigas, near mriga. There's no mrigas left because this lion is here. She's playing on the word Hari, taking it, oh, you're a lion? That's why there's no deers left in the forest. Hamho.
Did he say,
I'm
Shama Hari?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm Shama Hari, yeah. I'm the dark Hari. There's a black lion. Hamho Nagari. Oh, listen, girl. Madhavosmi. I'm Madhava. And then she answers, Asamaye Vaishaka Masakuta. How is it that the month of Vaishaka has come at the wrong time? Because Madhava means the second month, Vaishaka. And Mugde, he's starting to get a little disturbed. Mugde, foolish girl. Vidhi, Janardanosmi. You should understand, I'm Janardana. Tadiyam, yogyo vane vastitihi. So taking Janardana to mean the person who causes distress to all the people. So, yeah, it's quite proper that you've been put in this forest. You know, you've been sent in exile into the forest because you caused disturbance to everybody. And Baleham, listen, girl, Madhusudanosmi. I'm Madhusudana. Viditam yogyo dvirepo bhavan. And it's known quite appropriately that you're the dvirepa. Dvirepa. Repa is the ravakara over the letter, you know, the ra before the next consonant. Yeah, ra in the first letter in the conjunct. Well, dvirepa also means bee who has two wings. But Vishnu Chakravarti points out it can also refer to a word that has two ras in it. And she's implying the word barbara. You're just a barbarian. What does it say here? Everybody knows that the cowherds are just barbarians. So you're a barbarian, Drirepa. Anyway, it's clear to see how the double entendres are working here. And it doesn't require any splitting the words up differently. So it's Abhanga Shlesha. Okay. Sangamo, Sabango, Yata. Here's examples of a verse with several examples of Shlesha that involves splitting the words up differently. Kanti. Kirtira kirtireva vada me kinchid jade bhyakpadam dira ka pima bhavat yaho katamaho buddhir bhavet purnima kame da tava buyasi namadane twayeva me dadanam tan ma maspisha naspishyam sa shri man jito radaya. I don't know if I have all of this correct, but Kanti, Krishna's trying to approach Radharani, who's very angry with him. And he just says, Kanti, my dear lover. And she misinterprets that to mean Ka-ante, what remains at the end of life? She takes it as a philosophical question. Ka-ante, when a man's dead, what is he left with? And she answers, Kirtira Kirtireva, just his fame and his infamy. Vada me kinchit. Please say something to me. And she answers, okay, you want to hear about something? Jade byak param, the absolute truth that's beyond everything material. That's something. Dearda kapi, dear sober girl. You should just try to be sober. Bhavat, aho, katam aho. And she answers, well, I have to explain these. Ka ante. Instead of reading it as dear beloved, she takes it as ka ante. What is there at the end? And then, dear ka. Bhavat. Somebody around here must be sane. Some girl around here must be sane. Dira kapi bhavati. And she reads that as dira ka bhavati. That intelligence has become the constellation Raka, which is the constellation of the full moon. So Raka is another name for the full moon, sorry. So she answers, well, how can intelligence be the full moon? Reading instead of di ra kapi, di raka upi. And ka me da tava. Where's your intelligence? Krishna asks her. And she understands that to mean ka me da tava. She thinks that he's telling her that your absorption, dharana, is in lust, that you're just thinking about Cupid all the time. He was asking her, where's your metta? Do you have any intelligence? And she takes it to mean that he's telling her that she's just thinking about Cupid all the time. And she answers, Bhuyasi namadane twayeva me dharanam. She says, my meditation is not so much on Madana, Cupid, I'm meditating on you all the time. Tasman maspisha. And she tells him, okay, well, then don't touch me. And he says, Naspishayam, I'm not going to touch you. Sa Sri Manjito Radayan. Thus, the Lord of Sri was defeated by Radha. Anyway, there we have several examples of a double entendre that depends on splitting up the words two different ways. Okay, here's an example of not using double entendre, but using kaku, using special intonation to twist the meaning of the words. Yes?
Just wondering, what was the last line, therefore don't touch me?
I'm not sure if there's any pun there. I don't know.
How does it follow from the third line? Like, she says that my intelligence is not fixed on
Cupid. Well, the story is that he's trying to pacify her, and then she's just taking everything he says the wrong way, and he finally gives up. You know, she says, remains angry, and says, "Don't touch me." And he says, "Okay, I give up. I won't touch you." He says that he just couldn't change her. He couldn't change her mood.
Right.
Because she took everything he said a different way. Yes. No, comma. Where? Well, it's like tut. Tut becomes tun before ma. So therefore, tut is therefore. Therefore, don't touch me.
Yeah, one of them is me.
Well, ma spesha, yeah.
The first ma is don't, and the second ma is me.
It can also be ma repeated twice. But okay, no, ma's mom.
Yeah.
Maybe, but Vishnu Tavriya, the commentary doesn't mention that.
The other thing I was wondering, because Krishna says here, vadame kinchit, and seems like Radharani takes it in another way.
I'm looking.
Tell me, what is chit?
Oh, no, I see. Oh, yeah, no, no, I see. This follows.
Yeah, he says,
Kim chit. What is chit?
Yeah.
Okay. Also, it goes with the first question. The first question is, what remains at the end? And she says, only fame and infamy. Well, he's asking, well, what about chit? Doesn't that remain? And she takes that, she's asking him, what is chit? And don't you know what chit is? Chit is what's beyond jada. You know, kin chit, what is chit? Yeah. Okay, shall we move look at the third example? This is an example of kaku. Navadasi harinapi prichyamana nabata vilokayase vilokyamana nijam abhimatam ihyatam idanim viduvadane somoye sano nabavi. So there's nabavi. is said with an ironic mood, ironic intonation. Meaning, well, I'll translate. So one gopi is talking to Radha, who is still very angry at Krishna. And she says, you don't talk even when Krishna asks you something. And you don't look at him even when he's looking at you, when you're being looked at by him. Okay, go ahead, do what you want. What you want, let it be done. For now, idanim. Viduvarane, O girl with a face like the moon. Samaye, sano nabhavi. Are you going to remain like this in the future? After some time, are you still going to be like this? And it said ironically, in such a way that we understand she's strongly indicating that don't expect that you're going to remain angry at Krishna forever. You'll go back to him, I know that. You know, so you can act like this all you want for now, but I know, you know, that you're not going to be like this forever. That's implied, or rather suggested, by the intonation in which Nabhavi is said. Ironic intonation. In other words, the word suggests the opposite of what it means literally. In other words, you will change in the future. And when that happens, then we'll see how you get so agitated by Krishna. Okay, that is what Kavi Karnapur has to say about double entendre and kaku for now. The next on the list of shabda alankars is anuprasa, or alliteration. Repetition of similar letters. We'll discuss that tomorrow. That's a more complicated topic, and actually it'll take several days to cover everything he has to say about it. But we'll start. Anuprasa?
Oh. Sorry, I didn't know we were going to be doing this, but that second verse there had something else we did, and then Samasavakarna. So it's actually, that's Jiva Goswami's example of Sabanga Slesha Vakrakti. Anyway, it's a whole explanation to it.
But you already gave it.
Yeah, I could mention it quickly.
You want to?
Yeah, okay. So, Iyam Kastri. So Krishna is asking, who is this woman? But then the messenger of Radharani, she takes it that Iyam Kastri, there's no space between Kastri. So then the word, there's a rule in the Samasa Prakarana how the word Ku becomes Ka when it means small.
Small
yeah.
Woman?
So who is this small woman? So then the Gopi messenger says, street one bhavati, okay, the quality of being a woman's there, but katam ishat padamidam, but why this word for small? And then Krishna says, then Krishna says this, kimastani siddham, and so he's meaning that kima stani siddham, where there was actually a Vishnu saga there. And there's a special Brihat rule that when a shori is followed by a sattvata, you can optionally delete the Vishnu saga. So means kimaha stani siddham. No, this kar I've used is coming in the place of the word kim. It's a form of the word kim. It's the feminine of the word kim.
Instead of kim? Kimastani.
Yeah, this ka is coming in the place of kim, means it's a form of the word kim. It's a replacement of the word kim. So she's taking it to mean like a small girl, but he's saying, no, look, this ka is actually a form of kim. Yes. And but she thinks, the gopi messenger thinks that he's saying that kim astani siddham, you know, like what was done in the wrong place, like what was improper. Yeah. And And so the Gopi messenger answers that, you know, this statement of yours is improper. And Krishna keeps insisting that na ka kor udbhutam. He's saying that na ka space kor udbhutam. The word ka doesn't come from the word ku, right? You know, I'm not talking about a little woman. I'm talking about, you know, this word ka is not coming from the word ku. And then she says, wow, that's quite amazing. What is the kaku here?
Kaku or ka?
Yeah. Because she thinks that she's saying that...
Kaku.
Yeah, this doesn't come from kaku.
What kaku, she says.
Yeah, what kaku? What kaku is it? And then, you know, all glories to the messenger speech of this doe-eyed gopi to Hari. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, that proves you want to become a manjari, you have to know grammar.
Yes?
She knows her well enough to ask all those questions.
See, what's the sense of running off to Radhakund if you don't know grammar yet?
Okay, we'll stop now. Thank you, all glory, Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.